ESPNFC Daily is here. We're back for the second time today. Kay Murray and Luis Miguel Echegaray. Now, after this morning's drama, we've not seen anything quite the same in the games that followed. The last game, France-Australia, in terms of goals, did make up for the two goalless draws we saw between Denmark and Tunisia, Mexico and Poland. We're going to get to those games in just a minute. Let's just do a quick recap because we're going to go deeper, Luis, as we get into the show. But a quick recap, because it did look at one moment as though France were going to be upset too.
Absolutely. And what a ridiculous day, by the way. Is it the same day that Argentina played, Kay? I can't even remember. It's been kind of a
A long
ridiculous roller
day.
coaster. It's been a long day, but good to have everybody here, Kay. Always so good to be with you. And of course, some guests coming up. Listen, I don't know. Where do you want to begin? France? Are we talking France right now?
Well, you know, we're going to go to France. I'll just do a quick recap. It looked
Okay,
for
let's
one
do it.
moment, when Australia scored, that maybe we're going to get another upset on the cards. But obviously, the quality of France, even with the absences, shone through, and they managed to win this game 4-1. Giroud getting a record, Mbappe scoring again, and Rabiot turning it on for France. We'll get to France in just a moment. And the reason I say that is because we have to talk about the Mexico-Poland game, because we've got Sebastián Salazar joining us, Stevie Nichols coming in as well. And we don't want to be keeping Sebi up too late. It's probably been a very long day for him as well. Here he is.
Sebi!
And here's
Oh, and
Stevie
Stevie
Nichols.
too.
Can you hear us, Stevie?
Hello.
Oh, what a day. What a quartet. What a quartet it is. Let's start then, shall we, with Mexico against Poland, Sebi. Give us your takeaways from this one, because Luis Miguel Echegaray was pretty high on Mexico despite what we've seen from them in recent games. He thought they could bring something to this one. I suppose the big talking point, as usual, is Memo Ochoa.
Yeah, and that big save on Robert Lewandowski. I think there was a lot of fair negativity and pessimism around this Mexican team coming into this game and into this tournament. So I think I was shocked that they were able to handle the game as well as they did, especially with Robert Lewandowski. It's not just the penalty miss for him. He had one touch in the Mexican area in the whole first half of that game. Mexico really limited kind of any dangerous opportunities that he could get himself into. And then, yeah, it kind of comes down to that epic moment. It's captain versus captain. Mr. Chip, who's our great stats guy at ESPN, says that's the first time one captain has saved another captain's penalty ever in World Cup history. And for Memo Ochoa to do it against Robert Lewandowski, you're saying, one, it's Lewandowski. He usually doesn't miss from the penalty spot. But if there's, well, there's two weaknesses in Memo's game. One, he doesn't really like to come out, right? He's a shot stopper. He's not an aerially dominant goalie. The other thing that he's not really known for is penalty save. I mean, that's not a strong suit of his. So for him to come up in this moment, and specifically in that matchup and in that area, the penalty shot, was really, really a magical moment. And it's the third straight World Cup he's done it. You know, there have been greater Mexican players. Like, I always think Hugo Sanchez, Rafa Márquez at club level, much better. But if you ask, like, kind of the casual World Cup fan to just pick a Mexican player out of the hat, I think at this point they're probably picking Memo. And that's fair.
100%, Sebi Salazar. San Memo. A ridiculous, ridiculous save from your point of one of the greatest in Robert Lewandowski. Listen, a few things that Sebi there said, Kay, there that are important to remember. Most of the time, because obviously half of my work is with ESPN Deportes and stuff, and when we talk about Mexico, most of the time the glass is half empty, right? But today, I think we need to look at the positives. Look at the statistical positives of this Mexican team and what they did against Poland. They had more shots, more on target, more possession, and obviously, this is an asterisk of a criticism, because I really think this is where somebody like Diego Lainez or even Santiago Jimenez could have helped. They didn't have anybody off the bench that really could have just penetrated more, because that's the Polish game. They're reactive. They like to wait for you and then try and hit you, right? Obviously, the Memo Ochoa save was fantastic. I don't even think it was a penalty, but that's for another day. I think that Mexico should take away the fact that they got a point of a rival that is very experienced in the World Cup, and they can hurt you out of nothing. I think that Mexico should build from this. Having said that, this group, K, is insanity. Now that Saudi Arabia has beaten Argentina, I really don't know what's going to happen. But build from this point, Mexico, because it's something to build from, because a loss obviously would have been detrimental.
Stevie's laughing away there. It's a poor penalty, though, wasn't it, Stevie, from Lewandowski?
Well, I mean, it's a poor penalty. You can say that now because Ochoa saved it. But, I mean, it would have been a complete injustice had Poland won this game 1-0. I'm not going to argue with the boys that Mexico were by far the better team, but I'm going to put a little bit of a Debbie Downer on it. I mean, I didn't actually get the feeling that Mexico or Poland were going to score in this game. I mean, when the penalty came from nowhere, it seemed like that was the only way either side were going to score. I thought Poland were, I mean, to say disappointing would be an understatement. Mexico, they had a bit of a fight. They had fire about them. You know, they were lively. And obviously, the crowd was behind them. But the truth is, in the final thought, they're going to have to get way, way better. Because if they don't, they're going nowhere in this competition. So, yeah, I understand the excitement because of, as I said, the crowd and the players had some fire. But ultimately, there's not a lot on the end of that fire and that crowd. So they're going to have to step up big time. As far as Poland's concerned, they need to rip up what they're thinking and start again.
Yeah, Steve, we've got some few little audio issues with you, it's fair to say. We can still hear what you're saying, though.
No, this is robot Stevie talking. That's what's happening.
Maybe, Stevie, is your mic clipped in a certain... Is your mic clipped on you? Have you got a mic on you? Or is it just your system's audio?
I don't have a mic on me, no.
Oh, okay, maybe it's just what we're getting. But anyway...
Maybe he's underwater, anyway, K. Murray.
But Stevie's saying this, and we're talking about the group, Sebi. It has ended up being a lifeline for Argentina. Mm-hmm. They just need to win their two games now that they've got left, and suddenly everything could look okay for them.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I mean, from an Argentine perspective, you're never going to be eliminated after one game if you're Argentina, right? Because you're going to be the favorite in all three. And I think very much for Argentina, destiny's still in their hands. So the rest of the group, it's very interesting. I think Mexico and Poland probably really didn't think Saudi Arabia would be competing for one of the two spots to get into the knockout rounds. You look at Saudi Arabia's history, they've been to the knockout rounds just once. That was way back in 1994. Now that you've seen what they've done against Argentina, this very much feels like four teams for two spots. What it also does from a Mexico, maybe Poland standpoint, is potentially open up a possibility, one that 24 hours ago you didn't really see, for winning this group, right? And when you talk about, I'll just address it from the Mexico perspective, we always talk about Mexico and this curse of el quinto partido, not being able to get to that fifth game in the quarterfinals. A huge part of that is your draw in the knockout rounds. And a huge part of that is whether you're first or second in your group. Mexico, yes, they have this great record of always getting out of the group phase since 94, but it's usually as the second place team. And so if they could somehow, it would be a shock, get a win against Argentina and then follow that up with something against Saudi Arabia, you're now winning this group. And I think that would be really potentially, depending on goal difference, depending on what Poland does as well. And that's really from a Mexico perspective where you set yourself up to do something historic, which is the context in which this team always operates.
Yeah.
Sebi, didn't we see... Go ahead, Luis.
No. Go ahead, Kay.
Go ahead, Stevie.
Seb's got Mexico now beating Argentina, and then all they have to do is... I mean, kill your jet, Sebi. Come on, let's be honest. Argentina is still 100% favourite to beat both Poland and Mexico. And I'll go back
Stevie.
I'll go back to what I said the last time. How is Mexico going to score a goal? Please explain to me where the goal's coming from. I see a lot of endeavour and a lot of fire, as I said. I don't see where the goal's coming from.
Well, listen.
Pick up the other end, Stevie, and score a header.
Well, right now, that's probably the best chance.
I can't argue with you, Stevie, about the lack of kind of teeth to this Mexican attack, right? When you boss the ball like they did, especially in that first half, even when they created those great one-on-one situations, there's a play like 5 minutes into the game. Chucky Lozano gets in, gets tons of space, crosses it to the back post, and Alexis Vega just misses out on the final touch. There's another beautiful through ball that Jesus Gallardo, the left back, gets onto, and they just can't really create what was a clean look. In fact, I think Mexico's best chance was probably an accident, if we're thinking like Edson shot it at goal, Henry Martin nods it on. Mexico did not create a slew of wonderful chances. There's no doubt about that. But Stevie, to your point about Argentina, I'm not sitting here saying Mexico will beat Argentina or is favored against Argentina. But what I will say is this, not just Mexico, but Poland will feel a lot better about their chances of beating Argentina now that they've seen them lose 2-1 against Saudi Arabia. That's got to give you more confidence. I'm not saying it gives you total confidence, Stevie, but surely it must give you more confidence that you could pull the upset.
Stevie, make it your last point, because your audio is pretty bad, so we're going to have to let you go. But make this your last point to respond to him.
As always, there are two ways to look at it. One, yes, the Sebi look is the positive, well, Saudi Arabia's beaten them. The other problem, the way to look at it, is, by the way, you've got a wounded animal. And you've got a team
that cuts both ways.
That's wounded, and in my experience, a team with the ability and the capability, whether it's Argentina or anybody else who's just had a big failure, you're in trouble. I don't see them slipping next. So yeah, yes, you could take some heart from defeat, but I'll tell you what, you better be scared of what the animal's capable of doing now.
Stevie Nicol, we love you, but your audio is the weakest link, so we're going to have to say goodbye.
Can I follow up on something that Stevie said there?
Let us know. No, please do, and let us know about what you were talking to Juan Carlos Osorio about too.
Yeah, so, you know, I get what Stevie says about a wounded animal being, you know, particularly dangerous. I think we also have to acknowledge that one, like, Argentina wasn't not motivated, wasn't lacking urgency in this game against Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia had a great game plan, which may well be a blueprint for teams like Mexico and Poland. I think it's a little bit, and I will always defer to any former player, but certainly somebody with Stevie's pedigree. But I think it's a little bit of a brave assumption to just be like, oh, well, Argentina is now going to flip the switch. A wounded animal can also be destabilized, right? And so from a managerial standpoint, you're now desperate. From a player's standpoint, you're now desperate. Mexico has a point. Even if they lose against Argentina, there's still life, right? Argentina cannot lose to Mexico. And I think just as much as you may say, oh, that's going to motivate them, they're going to try a lot harder now. That may well destabilize a team. And for Mexico, everything is in your hands now. Not only this idea of potentially winning the group, you can eliminate Argentina. And that is not something that Mexico ever, ever would have thought was a possibility. Heading into this World Cup and heading into Argentina as the second game.
Luis?
You want to know about Juan Carlos Osorio? So we had him on. We were actually talking about the USA-Wales game, kind of looking back at that and the really big tactical adjustment that happened at the half from Rob Page, the Wales manager, going a little bit more direct with keeping more. Not so much that tactical decision, but why it was so problematic for the United States in the second half, right? What really happened in the second half of that game that saw Wales take over? And it's one of the beauties of having a guy like Osorio with us. You know, he's not one of these cheerleader, rah-rah managers. He's really, really analytical. I mean, it's beautiful mind stuff when this guy's talking football to you. And so he kind of broke down that for us and then also laid out what might be a good American game plan against England, right? Considering that maybe the United States will be a little bit precautious against England and not want to skip six as Iran did in a group where goal difference could be very critical. That could be really damaging to the American effort. So he's kind of painted a picture for us how the U.S. can be dangerous against England without exposing themselves all that much. And we'll have that on, of course, tomorrow's edition of Football Americas.
Yeah, I'll be making notes. I'll be giving Gareth Southgate a call and letting him know what's going on there. So, Luis, now what's your feeling about it? Because you've already had confidence in Mexico. It doesn't feel as though that's been swayed too much.
No,
this group is wide open. Who gets out of it?
Yeah, I didn't speak that much there because Sebi Salazar was basically saying everything that I was thinking. And I want to just to basically, I know that he's not here right now. Robotic Stevie Nicol has like gone away right now. But I do want to make a point. It's funny that right now we're talking about, oh, Mexico, what are you going to do now after getting a point against Poland? As opposed to saying, Argentina just lost to Saudi Arabia, one of the greatest shocks in World Cup history. There was not good enough in-game management for Lionel Scaloni. There wasn't enough good enough strategy in that situation against a Saudi Arabian side that just did the Mike Tyson thing and punched you in the face when you thought you had a plan. Argentina is the one that we should be talking about. How are you going to get out of this group? Of course they can still do it. Of course they can still outdo everything and, you know, reach, you know, the latter stages of the knockouts, of course. But Mexico at this point have a point where much better than Poland and have something to build on. In a game where we're always talking about strategy and foundation and what things can happen when you do the right way, I think that Mexico can look at this. Tata Martino can look at this. I love that tweet, by the way. He totally is. Ochoa is totally the Mariah Carey to Christmas to the World Cup. I think that the Mexican national team can look at a few things. Well, first of all, the number one piece of homework for Mexico is the one that's been continuously bugging them throughout qualifiers and even in friendlies, Nations League, which is they keep the ball very well, pretty patterned. They like to go wide and focus on Chucky Lozano. But when they lose the ball, that's when they become a little bit vulnerable and also penetrating inside the box. So Tata Martino has to think to himself, what can I do? Which goes back to my point, right? What do you have on the bench? It's a shame that Diego Lainez and Jimenez is not here. Now, the other thing, though, the last point that I will make is that
this was an amazing tweet.
This was incredible. I don't claim ownership.
It's the Louis Vuitton advert with Messi and Ronaldo, but somebody has photoshopped Memo
with the real star of the World Cup. With the real star of the World Cup.
But I love the fact that they picked that photo, him pondering as both of them are playing chess, and Memo Cho is going, "Oye, wey, I know exactly who's going to win this. It's me. I love it so much." But there's a question here, and I ask it back to both of you, Sebi. Who gets out of this group? Saudi Arabia, Mexico, Poland, or Argentina? Who gets out of it?
Look, I think you still have to respect Argentina, right? I mean, if they were to drop another game and see themselves eliminated, it would be a true shocker. I think they won't be as big a favorite as they were against Saudi Arabia, against Mexico, and against Poland. But I do think that this Argentina, with Lionel Messi in his last World Cup, it couldn't possibly go out in the group stage. So that leaves kind of one spot left. I think if you're Poland, you leave this game against Mexico feeling maybe a little bit like the United States felt after the game against Wales. It's a draw that tastes a little bit like defeat. You had a penalty kick with one of the greatest strikers of all time to win, and you couldn't get it done, right? Mexico, I think, comes out with a little different perspective. Yes, they've dominated the ball. Yes, they weren't as dangerous, but there's a lot of positives to take out of this. One, all the negativity that built up doesn't end in a game one loss. Right. And then on top of that, this is your big fear going into this game. Robert Lewandowski locked him up. And beyond that, the weakness of Mexican football for qualifying and the decade before that and the decade before that. And something that is so critical in tournament football is set pieces. There was three corner kicks in a row in the first 15 minutes of this game. And knowing what I know about Mexico and knowing what I know about Poland and Lewandowski, everyone was an infarto. No, it was a heart attack. And then, as the game wore on, Mexico looked more and more sure on set piece. I got to shout out one guy in particular, Cesar Montes. He's not a young defender, but he's a youngish defender who plays in the Mexican League. That guy is ready for a big European move, especially after today. He had himself a great game. And so some of the big questions about this Mexican team were answered. There's still a question out there that wasn't answered. When Raul Jimenez comes on, I think we were all frustrated. Henry Martin got the start at the number 9. But when Stevie points out, hey, Mexico has all this dominant possession, but in the end doesn't put the ball in the net, a lot of that, I do believe, comes down to the number 9. And there are teams that have number 9s, and they resolve games for you. And Mexico's not one of those teams. So it's going to have to come down to a Chucky Lozano, Alexis Vega, one of these other guys maybe coming from midfield. I don't want to write Saudi Arabia off, but I do want to point something out. They play with fire, man. Full credit to Renard and how well-drilled he has that back line. But And of course, it's something I think you can only do in the era of VAR. But for millimeters, you know, they're not out of that game in the first half. And if they try to do that against Mexico with Chucky Lozano running back in behind and Alexis Vega running back in behind and potentially a speedster, a real just north-south speed guy like Uriel Antuna running in behind, it's going to be trouble for Saudi Arabia. So I don't know if this is maybe some of the negativity and pessimism wearing off, but I feel like right now, Mexico is very much in the pole position to take the second spot in this group?
It's an open group, okay? I'm not going to go too much here, but Saudi Arabia have 3 points, Poland and Mexico one, and Argentina, supposedly the best one in this, a favorite to win the whole thing, with zero. Right now, it's an open group.
Yeah, it is. I can't tell if I'm being swayed. I had Argentina and Poland. I can't tell. And I don't know if even listening to you two. And especially,
are you sticking with Poland, K. Mara?
Yes, I'm going to stick with my picks. I will stick with my picks. But let me say, it's difficult to nail that down right now, especially with what I'm hearing from you both.
It'll be interesting.
I have one more thing to add that I think is important here with Argentina, because I had a concern when I saw the schedule laid out that Argentina would win the first two games. And because, you know, their goals in this tournament are so high, you know, they think about semifinals and finals, that third game would be a perfect opportunity for them to rest some players, that gives some guys an opportunity to play in a World Cup, and that would favor Poland. That would give Poland an advantage to get points off of Argentina that Saudi Arabia wouldn't have had, and certainly Mexico wouldn't have had. I think Argentina losing this game forces Argentina into a they're going to play everybody in that third game now, right? Because even if they get a win against Mexico,
they have to. When you lose that opening game to Saudi Arabia, you're not going to go for it. And by the way, Saudi Arabia, Poland next. Saudi Arabia's high line, that press, that suits Poland to a T. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out.
It will. It will. Sebi, we know it's late. It's been great to chat to you. We're going to let you go. And we're looking forward to hearing more from you on the ESPN Daily. Great to have you on here.
Show me that shirt, Louis. Show me that beautiful shirt of yours.
Come up, son, Memo!
Great to be with you guys. All right, we'll do it again soon, yeah?
Definitely. Anytime, Seb. Anytime. All right, let's talk about France's win then. I don't know where to start with this one. So we'll go chronological, shall we? That's what we'll do. All right, the Aussies took the lead in this one. And given the day that we've had, I thought, oh my goodness, fastest World Cup goal so far, 8 minutes and 22 seconds, Craig Goodwin. And I just thought, oh my goodness, what's going to happen here? And I shouldn't have, given the quality that was on the pitch for France, because we've talked a lot about these absences, Pogba, Kante, Benzema, Varane, Kimpembe and Nkunku. But Deschamps himself, and I know a coach is going to say this, but he said they're going to be okay anyway. We know about France's depth, so I should have known they were going to be fine, but it's just the day that it had been. Did you have any fears for them at that point, Luis?
Yeah, I mean, you know how I feel about Le Bleu, K-Marie, in this tournament. They're all or nothing. And I feel that a lot of the time, Didier Deschamps, you can't take anything away from what he's done with the French national team, winning the World Cup, etc. in 2018. But there's a lot of reliance on individual talent. And when you sort of get hit, especially hit early on by what, by the way, with all due respect, one of the weakest teams at this World Cup, then something's got to give. A tremendous opening goal for Goodwin. What a great, you know, touch ball and cross from Matthew Leckie. And you thought, like you said, wow, what's going to happen to France? But, you know, the French talent obviously outweighs, and Olivier Giroud, we'll talk about him in a second, Kylian Mbappé, and you know, they have too much for this Australian side. But I do think, though, okay, it's a deceiving result, because when they face a stronger side, a side that can hurt you and hold to a lead, they'll be watching out. But there are issues. And, you know, we've been talking about it already on this show, how I'm a little bit worried about that midfield. It's a little weak without Pogba and Kante, that experience, not taking anything away from the talent. But I want to see what happens when they face, you know, the one that I love right now, which obviously they got a draw against Tunisia. But Denmark, I think, obviously are going to give way more damage to this French side. But, you know, it was a big victory, but there's still question marks, I think.
Yeah, I suppose there are. But I think in the other side of things, see, like, would you have expected Rabiot to be doing what
no.
he did today?
And no, I apologize, Kay. And I apologize because
I don't think you're alone in that, Luis.
Yeah, exactly. We're not really that like, and Alex Pareja, by the way, our colleague, looks exactly like Rabiot, by the way. If you don't know who Alex Pareja is, please go on Twitter on his account and look at his face. They're exactly the same human being. But Rabiot, I literally tweeted, Kay, oh my God, I can't believe Rabiot went to the World Cup and not Bouba Kamara. And then boom, he scores and an assist for Giroud. I mean, but to your point, you know, he did well. I can't shake it off. So I apologize for that one.
And then Olivier Giroud, do you know what I keep hearing and it annoys me? What? Oh, and just a reminder, he didn't score at all in the last World Cup. And, you know, there's And this comes to even the player that's missing now in Karim Benzema for so many years, what he brought to Real Madrid with Cristiano Ronaldo, that it wasn't about the goals. And Giroud has been dependable so much in that way. In fact, we've had a question as to whether he's the most underrated striker ever. And it can be forgotten as well what he's doing for Milan this season. What did make me laugh on his second goal, the goal as well, by the way, that when we're talking about a striker being underrated, when you're tying records held by Thierry Henry,
ridiculous,
and people do need to sit up and take notice, but it was the way, what is he, 36, he starts holding his neck. You know, we know that feeling these days.
Oh, sacre bleu, my neck. I thought he hurt his face. I thought he hurt his beautiful face because he is a beautiful man. And when he heard himself, I was like, Olivier Giroud, please don't hurt yourself. You're so beautiful to look at. You can score as many goals as you want, but please don't hurt anymore. But I think that's a good question. I mean, and, you know, he's done tremendous in any club that he's gone to. Okay, fair enough. He hasn't like shook you and, you know, extravagated you with all the goals and stuff, but he's always delivered. And the fact that he's the all-time goal scorer alongside Thierry Henry is a fantastic statement for the French national team. And I think it's commendable. So yeah, well done, Olivier Giroud. You deserve everything. And Kylian Mbappé, we saw a few sparks from him. But I think this Denmark game, Murray, is going to be the biggest test for France in this group. I can't wait to see that one.
Okay, so you've still got a few concerns about them. Did they even miss Pogba and Kante then?
Well,
in this
already
one?
Said it.
That's where your concerns are, right, in the midfield?
Yeah, I think so. Especially, look, again, listen, 4-1 victory.
And I know Australia, with all due respect to them, look at the level that their players are all playing at.
Exactly. That's it. You've said it right there. So let me see what France does with a stronger team. They'll get out of the group. I never said they wouldn't. Let me see what they do against stronger opposition. That's when that question will be really, really relevant. That's when we'll see if Choumini and, you know, Rabiot, even Rabiot as well, and Camavinga, are they up for this? Because it will get tougher. But 4-1, all due respect, you got your win. Well done.
So, okay. So then I need you to explain what it is about Denmark. I know you've mentioned them in a few shows now. It was 0-0 today with Tunisia. We've got Christian Eriksen back, which is great to see, for that World Cup opener. They made it to the semi-finals of the Euros. So obviously they can't be underestimated. You watch them today. What did you take away from it that still makes you feel confident that they can trouble a team like France?
Similar things to what I saw at Euro 2020. They're kind of a slow train, but once they get going, they become stronger and stronger and stronger. And I think that that's what we're going to see. And by the way, let's not take anything away from Tunisia. A lot of talent, a lot of will. And it felt in many times of that game like a home game for Tunisia, right? Every time Denmark touched the ball, there were boos, etc. Obviously, the North African support was there strong for the Tunisians. And, you know, they're experienced enough in multiple tournaments, not just in Africa, to deliver. Denmark, to me, are like, you know, aside from, you know, calling them a slow train that gets stronger and stronger, they're also like a club team. They know each other so well. And so I think that the more they play, the better they'll get. Obviously, just like what I've said of France, it's going to be a test for Denmark as well. But I'm defiant on this one, Kay Murray. I think Denmark will top this group. The big test will be against the French. But this midfield of Denmark is much more compact, much more together, much more organized than the French one. So it'll be interesting to see. It'll be talent against collective unity. What would you make of Denmark? You have them getting out of the group, don't you?
Yes, I do. But it was very telling what Heulman said, the manager, afterwards in the press conference.
I think
that some of the outside situation, well, it's inside as well. But the fact they had to have the love taken off their shirts, that they were the One Love armbands, something where they wanted to make their statement. Yeah. He feels as though the whole situation is weighing on them being in Qatar. They were obviously trying to do their part to support human rights.
That's interesting.
And there's a lot of talk about what's been said in Denmark about it. Yeah. It was almost as if he was saying, he might have even said it explicitly, that they're feeling it. They're feeling that weight on them. And it's just going to be interesting to see how that affects their play going forward. With the manager saying that, It'll be interesting to see if any of our journalists were out there. If they were, we'll get them onto ESPN FC Daily to see what they took from that press conference.
Well, I mean, if they've dealt with pressure before, I think we have no better example than what they had to deal with Christian Eriksen in Euro 2020. So I'm sure that once again, they'll come together. But it's a fair enough point to maybe suggest that they're thinking to themselves, not again. Here we go, having to deal with outside of the pitch situations in order to come together. So yeah, it's a good one to note. But I don't know. I still believe in this Danish side. Maybe it's because they're all so good looking in that country. I don't know. I don't know what
Look
it is.
At you.
I know.
You need to go. You know what? You need to go and cool down. You do. You're getting very excited.
I'm Latin, Kay. I'm Latin. I love
Cristiano Ronaldo, of course. Ugh. We start the day by talking about Lionel Messi. There was going to have to be some Cristiano Ronaldo news today, wasn't there? Yeah. He's going to leave Manchester United by mutual agreement. The reports came out first, then we saw the official announcement from the club, the official announcement from Cristiano Ronaldo. It's immediate effect. The club thanked him for his immense contribution across his two spells at Old Trafford. Cristiano Ronaldo himself said how much he loves the club and the fans. It's also against the backdrop as well of some more reports about how United could be getting sold by the Glazers too. And we'll get more on that when we get someone like Gab Marcotti on. But in terms of the Cristiano Ronaldo news, this was always going to happen, wasn't it? After that interview, yeah. This is what we were expecting.
Nail on the head. The interview's objective accomplished. Done. That's exactly what he wanted to get out of. And I didn't say that much when Gab Marcotti was defending Ronaldo, or at least the things that Ronaldo was saying in the interview. I get it. Of course, he wasn't lying. All the things that he was saying, many United fans and even within the club agreed with Ronaldo's statements in that interview in terms of, you know, how it's a club in the past and many things need to be figured out. But it's just not the way to do business. What kind of, like, what does that do to a club, to a dressing room, to the culture of something, especially when you're trying to go forward? So is it mutual? Yes. But is it a forced mutual agreement? Probably. But the most notable point, which is what I was reading from our very own Rob Dawson, was how, like, the club doesn't have to pay him anything. Like, Ronaldo's gone, bye. Meaning that Ronaldo was just as urgent to leave the club as the club was willing to say goodbye to him. I think fair enough to him. Gab said a really good point as well, Kay, about the, look, Ronaldo, you want another club now? Well, it's up to you to lower your demands because nobody's going to be able to afford everything that you're asking for. So where to next for him? That's another point. But this is the best possible thing that could have happened to Erik ten Hag. He's thinking to himself, what? I thought Christmas was in a few weeks. This is amazing. Because now these players are going to come back from the World Cup. And those that are not at the World Cup, now they have this like proverbial baggage off their shoulders. Now they can just focus on the team. Yes, thank you so much for what you did to the club, Cristiano Ronaldo. But this is the present. This is the future. Time to move on without you. And both club and player can agree.
But where is he moving on to?
Know.
It sounds from Jorge Mendes that it sounds as though there is somewhere, and maybe that's the next big bombshell we're going to get from Cristiano Ronaldo.
MLS?
The club is going to be announced. I don't know, you know. Chelsea? Could that actually happen?
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? Would he stick in the Premier League? Does he want that just out of bitterness and revenge? Can Graham Potter even
Would it even be bitterness and revenge now if he said, look, as you saw, I tried to go to Manchester United. You look at the season he had last season, and then he says, it clearly wasn't working for both parties. So I did what I did there. Would they be so angry then?
Yeah.
Couldn't he just say it wasn't working?
There are three possible places for me. None of them seem realistic, but let's see what happens. One of them is Sporting Lisbon. I don't think that's going to happen unless he completely lowers his demand.
Yeah, whose own manager said, of course, we'd love him. We just can't afford him.
Exactly. So that's one. So that could see it. The other one is Real Madrid. Could you come back to Real Madrid?
Gab Marcotti has been banging the Real Madrid drum forever for Cristiano Ronaldo to return.
I'm with him. As long as he understands that Carlo Ancelotti is saying, listen, Karim Benzema is the man here, not you. So can you deal with that? Because he wants Champions League football. So that's another question. And the third one, which has already been rejected, is Paris Saint-Germain. They have other plans. It's not going to happen. No chance, no way. Maybe Juventus will be the fourth. But Real Madrid and Sporting Lisbon, to me, are the two front runners. Will it happen? I don't think so. Bayern Munich, forget about it. He wants Champions League football, Kay.
But if Portugal win this World Cup, maybe that changes everything and his own mind on where he goes next. Anyway,
they're not winning.
That will do. Do you know what, Luis? I'm not with you tomorrow. I've got to go and do my ESPN FC duty.
What? Oh, God. Yes. You tell me who your producers are, and I'll tell them. No. That's not happening. Especially on the day before Thanksgiving, K. Mari. I'm not going to be.
I know, but we're going to be back together for Thanksgiving. Okay, we are. Good. Make sure though you do join us tomorrow. We'll be doing exactly the same again. It's been great to have you all. Make sure to get those questions in for us as well. Thanks for being with us on ESPN FC Daily.